Hi, and welcome back to the show, Holistic Health Masterclass Podcast with me, your host, Brett Hawes. I trust you've been well and enjoying the episodes. Last week's episode was, I thought, quite interesting if you haven't listened to it, which is really all about the fiddling and fixing of herbal supplements on the international market. So I do have an announcement for today before we get going, and that is I'm super psyched. I'm really, really excited. It's taken me a little while to get this together, but I have my live online 10-week Holistic Nutrition for Amateurs program, which launches July 3rd. You know, check out the show notes and click on the link and you'll get the full course description. But this course is not necessarily for practitioners. So I want to be quite clear on that. I initially, you know, thought about creating this course because so many people wanted to learn more from me about holistic nutrition and food as it pertains to health. And so I sort of said, look, I'm going to draw on, you know, take my 15 years of clinic, take my 12 years of professional teaching and put this into an accessible and digestible course for you. Now, it is in depth. We will be covering a lot of things. We start with the ground, literally with the ground. And so talk about our connection, you know, human health as it pertains to the soil, as it pertains to our environment and our connection to the earth. And then we move from there into understanding digestion, optimizing digestion. And from there, we really move into a few different areas where we talk about proteins, carbs, fats, things like blood sugar, which is super, super important if you don't know anything about it. We, of course, with fats, I mean, really get into a lot of different things. So again, check out the link there. And then get into things like vitamins, minerals, core supplementation. What you will get with this program as well is 3 7-day menu plans, which will be a combination of sort of vegan, vegetarian, bit more of a sort of paleo style of eating, and then something that's just a little bit more well-rounded. Those all come with recipes, 7-day plans, grocery list, the whole thing. And then I've got a few other bells and whistles that I'll be giving you as part of that program, plus some impromptu Facebook Lives on topics that I really will be reaching out to you for guidance on that. And you know, what do you really want to hear about? And I'm happy to help you along that journey. So, you know, if you are perhaps a mom who's looking to learn more about nutrition and take better care of her family, this is absolutely 100% for you. If you are really anyone looking to learn more about nutrition and, you know, perhaps you're overcoming or trying to overcome some health challenges and you haven't really thought about food and health very much, definitely for you. And, you know, if you're listening to this and you're a doctor, you're a medical doctor, or perhaps some other kind of practitioner who doesn't really know much about nutrition, I think this is a fantastic program for you to really not just get your feet wet. You know, we will be going fairly in depth, but I've been very cautious to not go too deep so as to sort of speak over or speak past people, all right? Because I really want you to understand and get what we're talking about so that you can actually apply it in your life and go from there. So yeah, check out the show notes for details on that, and I'd love to see you in the program, and I'd love to help you with food and health. On to today's show. Today's show is really, you know, it was a very last-minute decision to actually record this, but it is a presentation I did a few weeks back on leaky gut and autoimmunity. I polled my practitioner group, the Practitioner Empowerment Network, and sort of said, do you guys want to hear about it? And overwhelmingly, people said, yes, please post it on the podcast. So, you know, we really get into a lot of different areas within this topic, but talk a little bit about what leaky gut is, how it's diagnosed or perhaps lack of diagnoses, typical treatment for leaky gut and immune system problems. And then, of course, for the second half of this presentation, get into really the fine points when it comes to diet, supplementation, stress, and so on. I have purposely edited out the Q&A at the end because I really thought that the Q&A went all over the map, and a lot of it was not really pointed towards the discussion on leaky gut and autoimmunity. So as always, if you like the show, please consider sharing with your friends, subscribing, leaving a review, and you know, share on social media. I would really appreciate that. And if you're not following me on social media, again, I'm going to actually put a link to the show notes there where you can just hop on my page and follow along. But you know, sharing on social media really helps me a lot, and it doesn't require much effort on your part. So I would really appreciate if you can do that. Even if you're not interested in some of the stuff, perhaps some of your friends, family, and network will be interested in it. Right, so we'll leave it at that, and hope you enjoy today's episode, a fairly dense and in-depth discussion. And I hope to see many of you in the Holistic Nutrition for Amateurs program coming up on July 3rd. On that note, I will be running an early bird special, which runs out or expires on June 24th. You can click on the show notes and get your $100 off. So July 3rd, we'll kick things off and hope to see you there. All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to IHN Open House and to this lecture on leaky gut syndrome and autoimmune disease. As Elizabeth said, my name is Brett, and I have been practicing for almost 15 years now, doing functional medicine, holistic nutrition, and iridology are sort of the three cornerstones, but I have a whole bunch of training that I won't bore you with in other modalities as well that I sort of fuse into my practice. So we're going to talk today about leaky gut syndrome and autoimmune disease. Anyone heard of leaky gut before?
I haven't.
Okay, buzzword, you have it? Okay, thanks for being so honest. You too? Wow. Do you know that you have it? This is a good question. Have you actually had testing done to evaluate? Okay, so we're going to come back to that, all right? Yeah. Because just because you have gas and bloating doesn't mean you have leaky gut. Okay, so we're going to talk about that today, all right? Because all of a sudden, because leaky gut has become such a buzzword, everyone all of a sudden has leaky gut. And every practitioner all of a sudden has a leaky gut ebook and a program and a whatever else, right? So I'm going to dispel a few myths today, but we're also going to sort of really zoom in on leaky gut and what it actually is, right? How many people have heard of autoimmune disease before? Okay, so everyone. Another big buzzword these days. And there are, to date, last counts, I think there were over 100 diseases that sort of fell under the umbrella of autoimmune disease. Okay, so let's hop right into it. Today we're going to talk about, all right, we're going to talk about some background information, anatomy, physiology. We're going to talk about something super sciencey and weird called zonulin. Okay, it's not from Star Trek. It's something else. Diseases, signs and symptoms. We'll talk a little bit about testing, but I don't really want to spend too much time there. And we're going to tie in leaky gut and autoimmune disease together. Okay, that's where I want to spend most of our time today. And we will talk about systems and some tools with regards to diet and supplements as to how you can actually start making inroads into fixing the leaky gut. Okay? So what exactly is leaky gut? Right? Leaky gut syndrome is exactly what it says. It's a syndrome. Right? Syndromes are usually more broad and more complex. Okay, it's not something as simple as having one definitive cause or one definitive set of symptoms, right? It usually has multiple causes and multiple sets of symptoms. And this is why leaky gut is very, very enigmatic. And what I mean by enigmatic is, you know, to give you some idea, this is actually not even taught in medical school, right? Leaky gut syndrome is not a disease. If you ask a doctor about leaky gut syndrome, most of them will say, doesn't exist, right? It's a fad, it's a whatever. But we now actually have functional lab testing to show scientifically whether the gut is in fact leaky or not. So it's not a disease per se, although it is associated with many diseases. It is in fact a syndrome, which is essentially a constellation, if you will, of these signs and symptoms. So
Why does modern medicine ignore leaky gut syndrome? Again, as I said, not an officially recognized or studied disease in med school, which is a shame. And here's a big one, right? Here's a big one. Doctors will usually, and I don't even want to say doctors, I'll say practitioners generally, will focus on symptoms and not the root cause. Right, so can you imagine, you go in and you have food allergies. So a doctor runs food allergy testing, if you're lucky, and then says stop eating the food and off you go. Or you have gas and bloating. Or you have constipation, take some laxatives. I have diarrhea, take some Gravol. And the list goes on and on and on, right? But we never ever look at what's really driving the leaky gut. And that's what we're gonna hop into today. So it's actually rare to find a doctor who is willing to test for leaky gut, which is why, thank you for being so honest in the front here, you suspect that you have leaky gut, but you actually haven't been tested for it, right? You were tested for it. Okay, great. With an ND. Okay. So naturopaths, functional medicine practitioners, and so on, these are obviously folks who are doing that kind of testing. Okay? So I think it's good for us to sort of start off here with the actual functions of the small intestine. So when we talk about leaky gut, this is a real good point here, leaky gut affects the small intestine, okay? It can affect the large intestine, but typically when we talk about leaky gut, we are in fact talking about the small intestine. The small intestine has three main functions. One is absorption, right? So this is where we absorb all of our nutrients, hopefully, right? This is also our protective barrier. So this is the interface, if you will, between the external world and the internal world, which is our body. And we need that protective barrier. That protective barrier is there to selectively allow nutrients into the bloodstream and to keep things that are not supposed to go into the bloodstream out. This could be bacteria, viruses, undigested food particles, right, and so on and so on. Toxins, chemicals. So that is really what that protective function is, and we're going to be coming back to a lot of this. The third function, which is key and really ties in with our topic today, is the immune system. So 70% of your immune system is actually in your gut, believe it or not. Moderated largely by good bacteria or probiotics, also moderated by little things called Peyer's patches. Has anyone heard of Peyer's patches before? Sorry, I'm geeking out here. So Peyer's patches are, there's about 30 of them, if I remember correctly. There are these little red-looking globules of lymph tissue, and they produce a lot of immune system cells, right? So when you look at cancer, for example, oftentimes what you'll find is the Peyer's patches are virtually destroyed and the immune system is now not functioning properly, okay? So immunity is key to our small intestine here. The villi and microvilli are these little finger-like projections, right? Hair-like projections. I don't think we have that up in the class here, no. These hair-like projections that essentially grab all the nutrients, right, and pull them into the bloodstream. So if we lose, for whatever reason, if these microvilli get filed down or they get shortened or they get damaged, we now have impaired nutrient absorption. Right, so this is in fact what the villi look like. Right, so we're looking at the small intestine here, and you can see these little folds and crypts, right? And if I zoom in on that, you can see these hair-like projections. So there's villi, there's microvilli, and basically that's how we absorb all of our nutrients. Okay, what we're going to find in leaky gut is the villi and the microvilli get damaged, right? And that poses a whole bunch of problems. So when we talk about this protective barrier, it's important for us to also talk about something called tight junctions, right? So tight junctions. Tight junctions, as you can see here, if you think about the gut, right, this here, what we're actually looking at, by the way, is we're looking at the intestinal lining. And can you see how these intestinal cells are nice and tight together? Right? So no gaps there. So these epithelial cells, or skin cells essentially of the gut, are bound by these tight junctions. And under normal circumstances, these junctions need to remain tight. That is exactly what creates our protective barrier, right? So if the junctions become loose, well, now all of a sudden that selective screening of nutrients and toxins, that doesn't happen anymore. The absorption of nutrients doesn't really happen anymore either. And what starts to happen is we allow the passage of food antigens, pathogens, and toxins into the bloodstream. And the key point here is you got to remember that if any of these come in, the immune system is activated. It makes sense, right? You know, if you had a stranger broke into your house, you'd probably call the police, right? Hopefully, unless you were strong enough to just tackle them. Okay? But you would call the cops, you would do something, right, if someone broke into your house. So it's the same thing in the body. When these foreign objects, whatever that is, these pathogens, these food allergens, whatever it is, when they slip into the bloodstream and they're not supposed to be there, the immune system says, whoa, hang on. I'm activated, I'm engaged. And can you imagine what would happen if you are having dozens of food allergies? Right? If you've got bacterial overgrowth, if you've also got yeast overgrowth, if you're eating processed food with chemicals in it, your immune system essentially is on high alert 24 hours a day. And when I say high alert, what we're talking about is overactive, right? It's constantly fighting all of this stuff day in and day out. So here we can see exactly what that compromised gut barrier or intestinal barrier actually looks like. And the example that we have up here is gluten. We're going to be coming back to gluten, right? Again, a lot of misunderstandings, myths, whatever you want to call it. And you can see how these junctions here are nice and tight, and this one here is loose. So this here, if you can't digest gluten, if your digestion is impaired and you're not digesting proteins properly, these particles will essentially slip through this gap here in the tight junctions and activate the immune system. Here we can see a side-by-side comparison. I like images, like, you know, people, visual learners. Okay, so this is what it should look like, and this is what it looks like if it's compromised. Okay, we all got the picture? Yeah? All right. Pretty straightforward, but in reality, a lot more complex than this. So the question then becomes, how does the gut get leaky, right? How do these tight junctions get loose? It's a good question, and I'll tell you right now that the research into that is, I don't want to say in its infancy, but it's very new in terms of its discovery. Okay, a lot of this information that I'm sharing with you has only really come about in the last 5 years at most. Okay, which is kind of crazy. How many people have been suffering with this for decades? Right, and we're treating all the symptoms. We're treating the autoimmune disease and so on. So, zonulin. Dun, dun, dun. Zonulin, I like to call the gatekeeper. All right, so zonulin, or let's back up a step here. So regulation of intestinal permeability is mysterious and not well understood. Okay, so again, researchers are actually looking at this to figure it out. To date, zonulin is the only known modulator. Modulator means the gatekeeper, right? So zonulin controls those tight junctions. It's a specialized type of protein that causes the tight junctions to become loose. In other words, the higher the zonulin, the leakier the gut. Okay, does that make sense? The higher the zonulin, the leakier the gut. And if you look at this image, I know the resolution here on the screen is not the greatest, but you can see that this is nice and nice and tight. But can you see how zonulin binds to these anchors here, to these receptors? And it kind of pulls them together. Can we all see that? So zonulin will pull that apart, and will pull it apart on the other side, and now the gut becomes leaky. So one of the key steps is obviously to get zonulin levels down, right? When zonulin is low, the gut stays nice and tight. Again, there's more factors that are involved, but just sharing current research here. So in cases of inflammatory bowel disease, this is our Crohn's, our colitis, our celiac disease, our ulcerative colitis. This is not IBS, by the way, IBD, inflammatory bowel disease, very different. Zonulin levels are elevated. So celiacs have levels that are 30 times higher than non-celiacs. Think about that for a minute. 30 times higher. We're going to talk in a minute about what actually raises zonulin, okay, because that's the next step. Can we do that at the end?
Is there a blood test?
Yes, I'll get to that. Okay, so we'll ask questions at the end. Key point here, many grains cause zonulin to become elevated. How many people following a whole grain diet? Yeah? Okay, so we're going to talk about diet in just a minute. But one of the big triggers is grains. And of course, one of the big triggers within grains is, of course, gluten-containing grains. Your wheat, your kamut, your spelt, and so on and so on. All right? So we're going to come back to grains in just a minute. So common signs and symptoms here include chronic intestinal bloating, gas, cramping, and pain. Alternating constipation and diarrhea. Now, this is just general for leaky gut. This is obviously going to differ from person to person. And depending on the severity, you might only have one, you might have five, you might have 10 symptoms going on. Intolerances to many foods and often chemicals as well. So when you read that, this is why most people are using Dr. Google and self-diagnosing themselves with leaky gut, yeah? And I say that because everyone tells me they have leaky gut all of a sudden. I'm like, well, really? Like, do you? Because gas and bloating can be caused by a whole bunch of other stuff. Constipation can be caused by a whole bunch of other stuff. So the important thing with regards to symptomology is never ever latch onto one symptom and self-diagnose. Okay, it's a very, very dangerous road to go down because you will turn into a hypochondriac. Okay, anyone there yet? Yeah? So don't put your hand up, right? I'm not going to put you on the spot. Okay? Trust me, I've taught thousands of practitioners and I've helped thousands of clients. I've seen that path. I know it very, very well. All right? So what else? Look at this. Headaches, muscular pains, poor sleep, poor concentration, chronic physical fatigue, itchy skin, rashes. Can you see how easy it is to self-diagnose here? And again, all of these symptoms can be caused by a whole bunch of other stuff. This is why functional lab testing is key. Because I have now over, I don't even know how long, since I've been doing functional lab testing, I've now started to actually test people. And I've seen that some people that I suspect that they have leaky gut come back, test is normal. Other people, I didn't suspect it, comes back, oh, holy smokes, you have leaky gut. All right, but if you look at these symptoms, you will never know unless you actually get tested. So the causes of leaky gut syndrome. Dysbiosis. Dysbiosis is a fancy word for bacterial imbalance in the gut. Right, so when you look at the bacteria levels, okay, so your probiotics versus your bad bacteria in lay terms, you should have mostly good bacteria, roughly 85%. And then a little bit of bad bacteria, which is 15%. Right? Not 0%. So everyone tries to obliterate candida into next year. You need a bit of candida. You need some pathogenic, quote-unquote, bacteria, because that actually keeps your immune system strong. So the problem is not the candida. The problem is not the bacteria. The problem is when it becomes imbalanced and you now have too many of the bad guys and not enough of the good guys. Okay, so that's what dysbiosis is in a nutshell. Viral infections, huge, huge. And you know, this is something that no one ever talks about. No one saw, when last did your doctor talk about a viral infection with you, aside from the flu? Actually, I think they even look at that as bacteria these days, which is odd. Yeah, antibiotics for viruses, antibiotics don't kill viruses. So taking antibiotics for flu is kind of a waste of time. Anyway, let's not go on a tangent. So viral infections, we're going to come back to this because viral infections are huge when it comes to autoimmune disease. Huge. Right? If you've ever had mono, anyone had mono here before? You don't have to put your hand up. Don't want to put you on the spot. If you've had mono, that means that you actually have Epstein-Barr virus. Okay, that's what mono is. Mononucleosis is in fact an Epstein-Barr virus infection. And what happens is the virus now will stay stuck in your body. Maybe not full blown in terms of symptoms, but it's going to hang out in the background and wait for an opportunistic moment to come out front. And we're going to talk about what that opportunistic moment is in just a second. So small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, or SIBO, that does tie in a little bit with dysbiosis, but SIBO is very, very specific. Okay, we're not actually talking so much about bacteria in a technical sense. You're talking more about archaea or archaea and these sort of weird organisms, right? But SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, is another huge factor with leaky gut. Candida, right? Everyone's got candida these days as well. Every time they read the symptoms, oh, that's me. Okay, you might not, right? Go get tested. This is a big one. Gliadin or gluten and wheat germ agglutinin-like lectins. Has anyone heard of lectins before? Yeah? So that's what the paleo crowd and the keto crowd are all banging on about, is lectins, right? And we find high amount of lectins in grains. And that's not just gluten-containing grains, that's all grains. All legumes as well, by the way. Right? They all contain lectins. Now, lectins are not in and of themselves a problem for everyone, but for people with leaky gut syndrome and people that are sensitive to them, it can be a huge problem. This is exactly why the paleo and the keto diets have taken off like that, and there's so many raving fans that are swearing by them, right? It's because you're cutting out the lectins. What lectins are, in a nutshell here, lectins can bind to body tissue anywhere in the body, and they can cause localized inflammation. And that's ongoing, right? So can you imagine, if you follow the food guide here in Canada, you are encouraged to eat, what is it, 8 servings of whole grains per day? Holy smokes. If you have autoimmune disease or you have leaky gut, 8 servings of whole grains a day is like disaster, right? So we're going to come back to diet in just a minute. Also, what's interesting here is gluten is not restricted to wheat alone. Right, we're going to talk more about this as well. When you talk about wheat and you talk about when doctors traditionally talk about gluten, what they're actually talking about, this is where all of the research lies, is they're talking about something called alpha-gliadin. Right? Alpha-gliadin is a very, very specific gluten protein that's found in wheat, in kamut, in spelt, and whatnot. But as we're going to find out in a little bit, there is a huge amount of, what? Well, huge amount is not a good way to put it. There are other gluten-like molecules that we find in all grains. Okay, and we're going to come back to that when we talk about diets in just a second. Last one on our list here, sorry, second last, food allergies, sensitivities, and intolerances. I've yet to meet someone with leaky gut who doesn't have food allergies. It's a rare, rare thing. Very rare. I've also yet to meet someone with autoimmune disease that doesn't have food allergies or sensitivities or intolerances or something. Okay? They go hand in hand. And stress. Stress is a huge factor. You know, people very willy-nilly and very casually these days would just sort of say, well, manage stress. Just go and manage stress. Go and do yoga a couple times a week. You're all good, right? But stress is about the way you perceive stress. Right? It's not just about, you know, our busy day and whatever else. That's not what stress is. Something that might be very enjoyable for you, like a busy lifestyle, might really keep you driving and keep you going, might be disastrous for the next person who prefers calm. If you perceive something to be a danger or something to be a threat, this could even be subconsciously, your body physiologically will respond in the same way. you will produce adrenal and stress hormones like cortisol, epinephrine, and whatnot. Okay, that is well proven. But also, stress comes in the form of internal stressors. So these infections that we've been talking about up here, infections are major stressors. Food allergies, major stressors. Multiple chemical sensitivities, major stressors. So all of these things, can you imagine if I had a huge wheel up here or a pie chart? I tell you, if I looked at stressors, there would probably be 100 different things that would all tie in there. So it's really, really important when you're addressing leaky gut and especially autoimmune disease, you have to start looking at stress. And some of those stressors could be relationship related. Some of them could be job related. Some of them could be environmental. So mold growing in the bathroom. Okay, chemicals in the environment. And it might sound very complicated right now to sort of go, oh my God, I've got to look at all of this stuff. Holy smokes, I'm never going to get there, right? But if you slowly start changing things and you start identifying where those big areas are for you, that's where you're going to get the most impact. Okay, the biggest impact in actually resolving this. So what is autoimmune disease? That's a good question. What is autoimmune disease? Anyone? Don't be shy. It's okay.
Overactivity of our immune system.
Okay, so overactivity of the immune system, sure. Partly true, yeah? Yeah?
The body starts attacking itself?
Sure. So the body, or more correctly, the immune system of the body starts attacking itself. Okay, that's really what we're talking about in a nutshell. The question is why? Why would the immune system attack the body? Isn't that kind of weird to think about, right? Your immune system just goes haywire and like, okay, we're attacking the body. Well, there's a couple of reasons why this might happen, and we've already covered some of them. Let's just get through this first and then see where we land up. So when the immune system, and the key point here with autoimmune disease is a collective term for 100 or more different diseases that fall underneath there. So some of the examples here, if my immune system attacks my thyroid gland, that is going to be labeled as Hashimoto's or autoimmune thyroiditis. If it attacks the gut, it would be called celiac disease. So in celiac disease, the immune system is attacking the lining of the gut. If you talk about rheumatoid arthritis, how many people have ever thought that rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune disease?
Never.
Never. Right? That's like new information in the last 5 years or so. Because the standard treatment, right? So rheumatoid arthritis, the immune system is attacking the lining of the joints. Okay, simply put. Or the joints, I should say, the cartilage and whatnot. But how many doctors, if I look at eczema, right, it's attacking the skin. The list goes on. Multiple sclerosis attacking the nervous system. So now the immune system is attacking the nervous system and essentially degrading something called the myelin sheath, which is that nice fatty protective coating around the nervous system. But what's the standard treatment for all of this stuff? So you go in and you get diagnosed. What happens next, right? I'm talking like conventional medicine now. Yeah. So medication, sure. I mean, anti-inflammatories. Cortisol, sure. Painkillers. And most importantly for a lot of this stuff, immunosuppressants. Immunosuppressants, right? So remember, your immune system now is attacking the body and it is hyperactive, right? So it's attacking the body and it differs from person to person. Some people might actually have more than one diagnosis. So they might have Hashimoto's and lupus, for example. They might have celiacs, and that's actually quite common, to be frank. It's quite common. So what conventional medicine says is you have an autoimmune disorder, your immune system is hyperactive and attacking the body tissues. We need to dampen the immune system. We need to dial it down. So we're going to put you on immunosuppressants. And then we're going to put you on anti-inflammatories, cortisol, whatever it is, and we're going to try and control the inflammation and we're going to try and control the immune response. But here's the problem. What happens when you stop taking the meds? Did you fix anything? You didn't fix anything, right? And you can imagine if leaky gut is driving all of this, you're going nowhere, right? Nowhere at all. And to double down on that, when we talk about a gluten-free diet, which we're going to come back to, most people, and I'm just citing celiacs here as a reference point, I think it's something like 96% of celiacs people, these are bona fide studies, by the way, so following celiac patients on a gluten-free diet for 18 months, I think it was only 4% or not even 4% of them actually fixed their gut on a gluten-free diet. Isn't that crazy? Right? So we're going to talk about that when we talk about diet in just a minute. So again, some more tissues here. I'm not going to bang on too much about it. The point that I really want to drive home here is this can affect any body tissue, anywhere in the body. I've had people, so autoimmune is actually one of the things that I quote unquote specialize in. I just happen to have seen a ton of it over the years. And I've had people come in that have had autoimmune disease where the immune system attacks what are called the parietal cells in the stomach. And they cannot produce any stomach acid. Can you imagine that? Your immune system destroying the lining of your stomach. You can't produce any stomach acid. Your digestion from there on down is done. Right? And these are people that have had multiple surgeries to try and figure it out. Rounds and rounds of drugs, all sorts of stuff. But when you start looking at it in this way, the picture changes a lot because you're starting to really look at the root cause versus the symptoms alone. So coming back to this diagram, what triggers, right? So remember, coming back to our tight junctions here, this is what we would like to see. This is what it looks like. And this here really sums everything up, right? This diagram sums it all up. So any of these things here, food particles, toxins, pathogens, viral infections, medications, stress, will cause inflammation on the lining of the gut and will cause those tight junctions to become loose. What happens next is any of those things can go in and can now trigger the immune system. So undigested food particles are a big one, right? A big one. And we'll sort of like go on a tangent here for just 1 second because I think it's important to discuss. When you look at proteins in food, right? Proteins are made up of amino acids, yeah? So we have 22 amino acids. And from those 22, the coding of the amino acids makes different body tissues. And I'm talking about from hormones to skin cells to hair to nails to everything. So think about it like this. I like to think of proteins and amino acids like a game of Scrabble. Right? So Scrabble, I've got 26 letters, but when I put my hand in the bag and I get my letters, I can make any word. So I can make any word in the alphabet with those letters, and if I start putting the words together, I can make sentences. And then those sentences can become paragraphs, which can become chapters, which can become the whole book. So the key point to drive home here is it's the order of the letters. So can you imagine in food, I eat a protein that is XYZ. And what I do is I break it down. So now I have X separately, Y and Z separately. And what I can do in my body is I can rearrange those. So I can make it ZXY if I want. So think about it like this. Is it fair to assume or to say that out of those 22 letters or amino acids, I would have the same letters making different words? Does that make sense? Okay, think about it like this. So in dairy, if I look at the amino acid sequence or the word, I'm going to have tissues in my body that have the same sequence. So it might not be XYZ, it might be XYZ ABC. EFDG, but I still have that little piece, that XYZ, right? So the immune system, when it looks at the food allergen, the undigested protein, it sees XYZ. And what the immune system does is it says, XYZ in the food, we're gonna attack you. And anything else in the body that looks like XYZ or that has that XYZ code in it, we're going to attack that as well. Does that make sense? Yeah? So this is why you have to, as a first protocol, you have to identify food allergies, intolerances, or sensitivities, and you have to eliminate them from the diet. It's a vital first step. You know, I'm part of these autoimmune support groups online, and I see some people that come in there, and they are just hell-bent on willing it away. Like, whatever, I eat what I want. No one's going to tell me what to do. And I'm like, oh yeah, so you're going to outsmart your biology? Okay, cool. Because it just doesn't work like that. There is no way to bypass this mechanism without cutting it out. It's impossible. Right? Of course, if you take immunosuppressants, then you're not as reactive. But it doesn't solve the problem. So with food allergies, really cutting them out for 3 to 6 months is key. And usually after that period of time, once you start introducing them again, you'll find that your body might tolerate them a little better. Okay? Some food allergies are fixed. In other words, you'll have them for the rest of your life. Some food allergies, most in fact, are cyclical in that if you cut them out, your body will actually bounce back. Right? Making sense here? Yeah? Okay, cool. So, of course, it's not just food intolerances. We can also have these pathogens, right? So toxins or pathogens. And as I said, viral triggers are huge. So I want to focus for a hot minute here on something called Hashimoto's. Anyone heard of Hashimoto's before? Yeah, so if you have thyroid problems, if you've been diagnosed with hypothyroidism, there's a high likelihood that you actually have Hashimoto's. I forget what the stats are, but I think it's upward of 75% of hypothyroidism is in fact autoimmune. It's just not necessarily being diagnosed properly. Why? Because you go to your doctor and they're measuring TSH, they're measuring T4, T3, and there you go. And if your hormone levels are low, you have hypothyroidism. Your thyroid's underactive. But no one is taking a couple steps back and saying, why? Have you ever asked your doctor, and again, I don't mean to bash doctors here, I'm just sort of calling a spade a spade. Have you ever asked your doctor why you have what you have? Anyone ever asked that before? Yeah?
They don't know anything.
No, well, it's not that they don't know anything, it's just that's not what they're looking at. You're not trained to do that, right? No one's interested in why. You know, go to your doctor if you get diagnosed with high cholesterol and ask them why my cholesterol is high. You're not going to get an answer. And I know because I've had thousands of people tell me that. So with Hashimoto's, what we would also be looking at, if we wound back the clock, we would be looking at why, right? Do we have autoantibodies? Right, what is actually going on? But here's what I want to tell you about Hashimoto's without banging on about it too much, is I spoke earlier about something called Epstein-Barr virus, right? So Epstein-Barr virus. So one of the sort of emerging bodies of research, especially with Hashimoto's, but it can... There's also it's also related to multiple sclerosis as well. One of the things that we started to see, or researchers are starting to sort of look at, is something called molecular mimicry. Okay, molecular mimicry. Go and look it up. What that is I have this viral infection, right? So let's say I got mono when I was 25, and then I overcame the mono, and I just kept going forward with my life, and then I also started getting food allergies, I started getting gas and bloating, and this is a common pattern, by the way, and you keep on going, and then I've got underlying stress in the background, the viruses kicking around in the background, and then I have a stressful event, and boom, everything kicks right in. It's what I call the perfect storm. Okay, so the perfect storm, you have all of those things going on, and you have the stressful episode, and bam, everything kicks in. My clients with autoimmune disease will tell me to the day that everything changed. They'll tell me after that day, I was never the same again. Now, relative to Hashimoto's and Epstein-Barr, the Epstein-Barr virus now lodges itself in the thyroid gland. Isn't that crazy? So the virus now hides out in the thyroid gland, and then it becomes active. So what the immune system does is the immune system now attacks the virus, yeah? But the innocent bystander is the thyroid gland. So you now have the immune system attacking the virus. You know, it's kind of like if we split up into two groups here and we decided to have a battle. I know this is holistic health, but it's a great analogy. And we just started beating each other, right, on the field. The field is going to get damaged at the same time, yeah? Okay, that's exactly what happens with the thyroid and, again, multiple sclerosis. There's a lot of research in that. So it's not necessarily that the immune system is attacking the thyroid. It's that it's attacking the virus. And what's interesting with viruses as well, not to go too deep here, is that viruses actually use your DNA to replicate. Okay, they're not the same as bacteria. So they actually take a bit of your coding, build it into their own DNA, and that's how they keep replicating. Okay, I'm just saying that in very lay terms now. So you can imagine there's a lot of, this is what we call molecular mimicry, right? The molecules look the same. They mimic each other. And so the immune system gets confused. So how do we fix this? This is a good next step, right? Is everyone clear for now? I mean, at least in the hour that we have, is everyone getting a good understanding here of what leaky gut is and what autoimmune actually is and how this all fits together? Okay, so the first step, as I said earlier, detect and remove dietary and environmental triggers. Right, key first step. If you don't do this, because here's the goal, right? Let's talk about the goal. The goal for fixing leaky gut is obviously to fix the gut. No brainer. But the goal for fixing autoimmune disease is to remove the autoimmune triggers. So to remove the autoimmune triggers or the immune system triggers, we have to get them out. We have to seal up the gut. And what that will do as a knock-on effect is it will dampen down the immune response. Because why is the immune system overactive? Why is it attacking the tissues of the body? Because you've got all of this other stuff going on. So clean up all of that first, then see what happens with the immune system. So detecting and removing dietary and environmental triggers is absolutely essential. Strengthening digestion. I've yet to meet someone with autoimmune disease that doesn't have poor digestion. Because one of the roles, well, many roles of digestion, obviously, if your digestion is not working properly, guess what happens? You don't digest those proteins. If you don't digest those proteins, they cause inflammation, they cause the leaky gut, and they leak into the bloodstream. And then my immune system attacks, and it attacks the body as well. So strengthening digestion on that front is absolutely essential so that you break down those food particles properly. But also, one of the major functions of stomach acid is to actually sterilize pathogens. How is it that some people, you ever seen this before? People all eat the same food and not everyone gets sick. How is that, right? It's not really a mystery at all. It's because some people have enough stomach acid and their digestion is strong to wipe out the pathogen. Those who got sick, it just bypassed, right? It went straight through your system. So you also want to correct dysbiosis. So getting rid of that bad bacteria, if it's clearing up the SIBO, if it's clearing up the candida, whatever that looks like in the gut, if there's that imbalance, you got to clear it up. Okay, key. Identify sources of stress and work to reduce or to manage them better. Stress is a very interesting topic. Right? The only reason why I say that is you're never going to get rid of stress. Unless you want to go and do it yogi styles in Nepal on top of the mountain, just breathing fresh air. Yeah, that's really the only way to do it. There are always going to be stressors in life, especially in the modern world. That's just how it is. Busy jobs, air pollution, blah, blah, blah. It just, so with stress, it's not so much about getting rid of the stress. It's about changing the way you respond to the stress. Coming up with better coping mechanisms. Because most people who are stressed out have self-destructive coping mechanisms, right? Self-sabotaging. Whether it's smoking cigarettes, whether it's drinking too much booze, right? Whatever it is, okay, pick one. That's how people medicate stress. That's how we do it. But if we can learn of supportive, if we can learn to support ourselves with stress, that's really the way forward, because now you're actually transforming the stress versus simply trying to shut it out. Does that make sense? Okay. The reason why I'm banging on about this is because it's so important with autoimmune disease. It's key. And it's the piece that most people leave out, funnily enough. Right? Just leave it right out. And oftentimes, you will find that these sources of stress can be buried very, very deep in our subconscious. Childhood traumas, okay, et cetera, et cetera. So things that are not even happening right now, things that have happened years ago, but you've stored it in your subconscious as a traumatic experience. And your subconscious is 90% of your brain, by the way. Okay, only 10% of your being is actually conscious. 90% is unconscious. So if you've got this stuff locked away in the subconscious and it's driving your whole being, you might not even be aware that it's actually an issue. Okay, so start looking at that sort of stuff as well. And of course here, repair intestinal lining. I mean, it's kind of what we're doing. So really, really important here. I can't stress this enough. You must remove, then repair. You are never going to fix leaky gut in one foul swoop. It is impossible, right? It doesn't work. Things take time. You know, people don't appreciate healing in time these days. Everyone's like instant gratification. What's the quick fix? And there's things, I'll talk about a couple of things that I do with my clients to really give them a little jump start. In fact, oftentimes it's a big jump start. But the actual healing process, I mean, if you look at Candida, for example, Candida at the low end is an 8-week protocol. That's like if it's mild. If it's severe and it's systemic Candida, that's a 9-month program. If you're talking about SIBO, that's 8 weeks. Right? See what, if you talk about leaky gut in and of itself to fix, if it's really bad, might take up to 2 years. I know it sucks. Everyone looks really disappointed all of a sudden. I mean, geez. I didn't make up the rules. I mean, it's just the way the body works, right? But this is what I mean, appreciating that and understanding that, you know, when you go on a healing regime, it's not about going on a 6-week program and then I'm going to go back to what I was doing before. It doesn't make any sense, does it? Right? So I drove my car through the gravel pit and I got sand in the engine and it crapped out on me. So I went to get it fixed and then I drove it back in the gravel pit again. It just doesn't make any sense, right? So true healing is actually about changing direction and identifying all of these things, removing them, and then making lasting choices, right? Lifelong supporting choices. So beneficial foods. Vegans, I'll get to you in a minute. So beneficial foods here. What time? Are we good? It's 1 o'clock? No. What is it? Is that even working?
12:25.
Okay, great. So beneficial foods. Animal proteins. You do have to be careful with eggs and shellfish. Some people are quite sensitive to both of those. They're quite common allergens. Plenty of fats. Right? Fat is really, really key. You can see butter, ghee, animal fats, coconut, avocado. We'll talk about which fats to avoid in just a second. Bone broth, right? Grass-fed, organic, preferably homemade bone broth. Please don't buy non-organic. It's not a good scene at all. And I would strongly caution against bone broth powder. I don't know why people are making bone broth powder. It's just, I don't know. Anyway. The reason why I say that is they've now done testing on bone broth powder, sky high in certain toxins. You're taking broth and you're drying it out. I mean, you're basically concentrating everything into the powder, right? So make your own. It's not that hard. Get a pressure cooker, click the button, go and watch TV, do whatever you want. The pressure cooker does all the work. Fermented foods, right? So fermented foods would be things like your sauerkrauts, your kimchi, your natto, your tempeh. I mean, now they ferment everything, right? Go to restaurants, all the hipster restaurants are fermenting everything. But fermented foods contain probiotics. And sometimes, what I will say, in severe cases of leaky gut and severe cases of autoimmune, sometimes the fermented foods are too much in the beginning. I'm talking like a teaspoon of sauerkraut juice. Like that's enough. I've had people at half a teaspoon, they just blow right up. Because if you've got dysbiosis or bad bacteria, as soon as you start introducing good guys, the good guys start wiping out the bad guys, and that creates gas and bloating. Vegetables, obviously, fruits. Nuts, to some degree. Some people are quite sensitive to nuts and seeds, so sort of approach with caution there. But definitely no peanuts. Right? No peanuts. Peanuts are a bad idea. Reason being, they are loaded with aflatoxin, okay, which is essentially a type of mold, if you will. Also, they pull a lot of toxins out the ground. Okay, I think 180 something toxins that they found in peanuts. Right? Well, you kind of wonder why is everyone reacting to peanuts? Right? No peanuts in school. No peanuts anywhere. Just ban peanuts. Yeah, I'm not going to talk about peanuts. Give me 1 second. I'll come back to the questions. Okay, so hold your questions. We're going to have plenty of time for them. Foods to avoid. All right, don't shoot the messenger here. All grains. Now, you're going to find that quinoa, buckwheat, and amaranth may be tolerated. But coming back to what I was talking about earlier, alpha-gliadin is one type of protein, gluten protein, that's found in wheat, kamut, and whatnot. But an Australian study, I think in 2012, somewhere around there, an Australian study identified that there are in fact 400 gluten-like proteins that are present in all grains. And so what you're going to find is some people are not necessarily reacting to alpha-gliadin as much. They might be reacting to some of these other gluten-like proteins in grains. Corn is another one, right? A lot of cross-reactivity with corn, cross-reactivity with potatoes. Now, you might be looking at this off the hop and going, oh, my, this is super restrictive. It is super restrictive. Right? You got lots to eat here. There's lots of stuff to eat. But going on a restrictive diet means that it is a therapeutic diet. This is not a lifelong diet. Although some people are starting to eat this way. Because if you go restrictive for a shorter period of time, and we'll talk supplements in a minute, if you do that, what starts to happen is you accelerate the healing of the gut, and then eventually what will happen as time passes is you'll be able to open the diet up again. All right? So, again, the quinoa, the buckwheat, and the amaranth they tend to be the lowest in terms of trigger. But this is why, again, the keto crowd and the paleo crowd are swearing by it, because they've cut out all the grains. Starchy vegetables, so potatoes, yams, legumes, another one, so all the beans. How many people, you know, this is a good teaching moment, because how many people go and read a blog or look at the food guide and they say, or speak to their dietitian, and we should be getting lots of whole grains and lots of beans because of the fiber? Right? Appreciable amounts of fiber, because fiber is good for the gut. Well, if you have autoimmune disease or leaky gut, that's like the worst diet that you could ever be eating. And how do I know this? Because I've helped so many people that I look at what they're eating and they say to me, I'm eating squeaky clean. I cut out all the processed food. I'm eating this type of diet and I don't understand why it's not working. I say, because these have lectins, these have phytates, right? These have these wheat-like agglutinins, and these other gluten-like proteins, that's why it's not working for you. And you know what? Don't take my word for it. If this is you, go and try it out. I've had people in 4 days just call me up and like, dude, I don't know what just happened. Like, this is a 180, I feel amazing. So your body will tell you if it likes it or not. Dairy. Not a fan of dairy for many reasons. I don't have time to get into it today. But dairy, I find, is probably the biggest trigger for inflammation. I've yet to see a food that when you remove it from the diet and you reintroduce it, produce such a profound and powerful effect on people. I've yet to see that. So dairy as well is also a common allergen, right? A lot of people are reacting to dairy. You might find that as time passes, your kefir, perhaps your yogurt, which have probiotics, that might work for some people, but definitely in the early stages, I would avoid all dairy. Okay, because when you react to dairy, we're not talking about lactose intolerance, which is common. We're actually talking about an allergy to the dairy proteins. So if you have type 1 diabetes, type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease, by the way. If you have type 1 diabetes, you should avoid all dairy forever. Because the proteins in the dairy look like the proteins that make up the pancreas. So in type 1 diabetes, the immune system is attacking the proteins in the pancreas. Right? So can you imagine? It's attacking the proteins in the pancreas, and now I'm eating dairy that looks, quote unquote, like the pancreas. You're just ramping up your whole immune response and saying, hey, fight, fight, fight the whole time. So when you cut the dairy out, the immune response goes down. Now, you're not necessarily going to reverse your type 1 diabetes like that, but you're going to dampen down the response. You might not need as much insulin. You might not need other meds that go along with that. Sugars and sweeteners, alcoholic drinks, kind of a no-brainer there. If you do want to have some booze, tequila is the way to go with this. People are like, yay, win, all right. Okay, tequila is actually the best way to go. Some people also vodka, because they have no sugar, right? So it's the sugars in them. When you're going with wine and beer, I mean, it's just disaster, right? Disaster. Also, tequila is made from cacti. It's not made from grain. I swear I love tequila. I actually don't drink tequila at all. I can't stand the stuff, but whatever. Right, so let's talk about some foundational support as far as supplements go. When we talk about supplements, I really want to stress something here. If you don't do the diet and you just do the supplements, because that's the lazy way, you're not going to get anywhere. Okay, because you will use the supplements just like you would use a drug. And once you take the supplements out, things could very well just flare right back. Okay, quite easy and quite common. So you must have the diet in place first and then start introducing the supplements. So first one, and again, not everyone needs HCL. Not everyone needs stomach acid. But you should at least evaluate that or experiment a little bit. But digestive enzymes are huge. Right? So digestive enzymes are going to give you that support where you can actually break down your food particles properly for all the reasons that we discussed a little earlier. Fish oil or flax oil. Right, so fish oil and flax oil, pick one. Right, I think that fish oil actually works a little bit better. But if you are vegetarian or vegan, flax oil will do the same thing. They are anti-inflammatory. Okay, that's one of the big things, anti-inflammatory. Can also help with detoxification. Okay, so stimulating the liver. Broad spectrum multivitamin of some kind. Right, and I don't want to get into which multivitamin is the best. If you want to pick a good multi, you should at least identify where your weaknesses are. Okay, that's typically the way that I work. If you identify that you're more prone to stress and blood sugar issues, then you should pick a supplement that has higher amounts of B vitamins, zinc, chromium, and so on and so on. And that way you're using one multi to support multiple things at the same time. Does that make sense? Yeah, everyone always asks me, what's your favorite multi? I'm like, I don't have one. I don't know. Who are we talking about? All right. You can also use, I'm a huge fan of concentrated whole foods powders. Okay, huge fan. Because I find that the dosages are low, but it's more bioavailable because they're food-based. Right, so I've actually started over the last few years really steering away from synthetics and isolates, which is what most multivitamins are. You know, sort of like a lab putting some things together and then saying, here we go, this is what nature looks like. I sort of go, well, why don't I just have nature instead? You know, why can't we enhance nature, concentrate nature? Because there's all sorts of things, when you start getting into greens powders and that, there's all sorts of things within the greens powder that are trace elements that you will not be able to find and put in a lab, okay? So, and there's many other benefits to greens powders and all that sort of stuff, which I'm not going to get into here. Lowering inflammation, shifting pH, so it tends to be more alkaline, okay, and providing all of those nutrients that we spoke about. Antioxidants are key. Right, people with leaky gut syndrome, if you start picking through the literature, have a high amount of oxidative stress. Right, in other words, there is increased oxidation and there's not enough repair or antioxidation. So they're sort of slowly just chipping away at things and degrading, if you want to look at it like that. So antioxidants are really, really key. And of course, probiotics, which we discussed earlier. Be careful with probiotics, okay, especially not so much for leaky gut, but for autoimmune. Why do I say be careful? Because probiotics modulate or control the immune system, right? So if my immune system is hyperactive and I take a strain of probiotic that jacks up my immune system, that's not going to be good. Does that make sense? My immune system is hyperactive and I take a probiotic that increases immune system function. So now it's going to be even more hyperactive, which means that your immune condition is going to get worse. Your autoimmune condition is going to get worse. Okay, that's really getting into the, like, splitting hairs here and being quite fine. But, you know, work with foods for probiotics, especially in the beginning. It's a good way to go. So some of these sort of niche nutrients here and botanicals. Glutamine has a long history when it comes to gut barrier or the intestinal lining. What glutamine does, glutamine actually feeds the cells that line the digestive tract. So you can imagine in leaky gut, those villi that we spoke about earlier, those microvilli, right? In leaky gut, aside from the tight junctions becoming loose, the villi also get filed down. Right, we lose that absorptive surface. And so what L-glutamine and N-acetylglucosamine there, those two together, they actually help to regenerate the intestinal lining. Anyone tried glutamine before? Glutamine is also very, very good for balancing out our immune response. Colostrum is N-acetylglucosamine, very, very similar to L-glutamine, by the way. Okay, very, very similar. Colostrum is essentially extracted, for lack of a better word, from the first milk of cows. Okay, so bovine colostrum is usually what we would get, but that has a high amount of immunoglobulins or immune system properties, right? So it's a good balancer or modulator for the immune system. In other words, if the immune system is low, it will help to bring it up. If the immune system is high, it will help to bring it down. Okay? Some people, I will say this, some people who are very, very sensitive to dairy might not have a good time with colostrum. Okay, because it is dairy derived. So just be, you know, these are really for people that are super, super sensitive. If they are not super sensitive, definitely try the colostrum out. Okay, it works wonders. I've had great success with colostrum, of course, with the diet, with lupus especially. Okay, so very, very good for lupus. Aloe vera is, I forget what the sort of colloquial name is, but it's something like the green medicine chest or something like that. Right, so many widespread benefits. And aloe vera, has anyone taken aloe before? We've all seen aloe plants, right? It's kind of got that slippery, gummy kind of texture to it. The polysaccharides in aloe are very, very soothing to the gut, right? Because remember, we're dealing with an inflammation of the gut here. And the aloe vera can also help to heal the gut as well, so repair that intestinal lining. Cat's claw. Be careful with cat's claw and the autoimmune side of things. But cat's claw is a powerful immune system modulator. And very, I wouldn't categorize this as my front and center for leaky gut specifically, but definitely for immune system function, long, long history of being a powerful immune tonic. And that goes for medicinal mushrooms as well. Okay, so I do training for a company called Host Defense, which is a guy by the name of Paul Stamets, who's essentially Mr. Mushroom in the world. It's just like the information just boggles the mind. You know, when we talk about immune system dysfunction, I think you said earlier, the immune system is overactive, right? If you really start getting into it, the immune system is unbalanced because there's multiple different parts of the immune system. And what you find is in certain autoimmune diseases, some parts are more hyperactive, some parts are more underactive. So it's this imbalance. So mushrooms are fantastic for balancing out the immune system, right? Very, very widespread actions. The one that I will say you probably want to avoid is something called turkey tail. Okay, turkey tail mushroom really boosts the immune system. So great for things like cancer, breast cancer, and so on. Lots of studies on that. Well, not lots, but studies on that. So I would be a little cautious of using turkey tail and autoimmune. But definitely some of the other ones would be fantastic. Your reishi, your chaga. Chaga, lots of antioxidants in chaga. Right, lots. Your cordyceps, your maitake. Okay. And all the mushrooms have other properties as well, right? So if you get into maitake, for example, maitake is very good for the immune system, but it's also very good for balancing blood sugar. So if you have blood sugar issues and, right, another really, really good one for autoimmune and particularly for multiple sclerosis and for lupus is lion's mane, right? Lion's mane, anyone heard of that before? Anyone into mushrooms here? Yeah, this is like the most tripped out thing when you start getting into them. They are just so far out. It's like little aliens running around, right? What's that? That's a whole different story. We won't get into that today. Okay, but the lion's mane actually looks like this long, it's a white ball of feather-like looking strands, if you will. And lion's mane has something in it called nerve growth factor. Right, so nerve growth factor, as the name suggests, regrowing or regenerating the nerves. And as another function, is also going to help balance the immune system out. Okay, so medicinal mushrooms are huge. Okay, so we'll wrap it up there.